It's the anger episode. Oh, it's Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. It's episode 5. This is the best podcast about the Green Bay Packers. We are recording from the beautiful studios here in the Loop at Radio DePaul Sports. I am Mike Fleischman, and with me, we're going to pour some salt on it today. It's Matt Mellemsetter. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Salty.
Oh, I'm angry, man. I'm really upset.
I'm upset. We're a bit late on this because we have lives and we have things to attend to. Yeah, we're busy gentlemen, and we do dope things. If I can PG-13, one of my favorite
life is
secondhand attributed.
I do dope things.
Yes, my secondhand attributed Kanye quotes. Conway.
Like Conway Twitty.
Conway Twitty, yeah.
Can
that'd be better
little,
if Conway Twitty said that, actually. I bet his life is dope, actually.
Oh, no, his life was super dope.
Okay. Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Is he dead? Is Conway Twitty still alive?
Don't know.
Twitty, he's so dead, dude. Conway Twitty. Alive.
How about the mashup album Kanye Twitty?
Over some Conway samples.
Well, the third thing that comes up is death. So, 1993.
Yeah, he's so dead. He's been dead for a long time.
Harold Lloyd Jenkins, otherwise known as Conway Twitty. That man had a perm, ladies and gentlemen.
What a way to go.
Kanye Twitty, the new country rap thing happening. All right, we were not going to record an episode until next week. But late last week, the NFL National Anthem protest meetings were held, and the decisions that came out of that got the both of us so incredibly salty that we had to essentially convene an emergency session of Cheeseheads in Chicagoland as soon as we possibly could in order to address the great festering boil that is the NFL and its ownership and management and policies and attitude and everything in the world. You've got the numbers. You've got the research. I have got the basic story.
You've got the anchor.
So, yeah, I've got the anchor. You have got the sails. So we're going to run it down here. Essentially, there were owners' meetings, and the owners, in their infinite white billionaire wisdom, look to create a policy that will anger everyone and placate no one in regards to the player protests that have been happening during the national anthem. I'm going to find myself $10 if I say anthem protests at any point during this. But the policy statement, the 32 member clubs of the National Football League have reaffirmed their strong commitment to work alongside our players to strengthen our communities and advance social justice. The unique platform that we have created is unprecedented in scope and will provide extraordinary resources in support of programs to promote positive social change in our communities. The membership also strongly believes that, and here's the thing, all team and league personnel on the field shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. This was our key national problem, Mellemsetter, is we are not showing enough respect for physical objects and auditory signals. Two, the game operations manual will be revised to remove the requirement that all players be on the field for the anthem. So if you do not want to stand for the national anthem, you may go into your designated free speech zone in the basement of the arena where there are no cameras. Three, personnel who choose not to stand for the anthem may stay in the locker room or a similar location off the field until it has been performed. Four, a club will be fined by the league if its personnel are on the field and do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. There we are again with those words that are just like, you are boiling my pasta. Five, each club may develop its own work rules consistent with the above principles. So you can develop your own rules as long as they're the rules that are above here.
Yep.
Regarding its personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem, and the commissioner will impose appropriate discipline. That's my new least favorite sentence ever published by human beings. Man. The commissioner will impose appropriate discipline on league personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the national anthem.
Welcome to the National Fascist League.
Oh, this is garbage. I am... Of course, the thing that we have to start with here, and this is the thing that I do not know how many human beings swing and miss on this, This is not a protest of the flag or the national anthem.
It's not.
It never was.
That's never been the point. That's dating back to the very first time that anyone has kneeled. It has not been about the national anthem. It's been a bit about police brutality. It's been about bigger social issues than the national anthem.
And the national anthem, which it has taken on this like sacrosanct position in the NFL as you know, everything in our world is currently very strident because you know, we have bad president and we have we have angry world right now.
Mad world.
Yes, everything becomes more strident. So this idea of the national anthem being some sort of great symbol of the country is, I don't think it's necessarily wrong, but its current hyper important status, its very inflamed status in the national consciousness is completely bonkers at this point.
It's I don't know what to even say, Mike. This is it's left me at a loss for words. I really want to get into the numbers and kind of like tear down this idea that the NFL is losing money because of these air quote anthem protests. It's silly. It's so silly and frustrating, and it's driven by Donald Trump. There's been a couple different reports. Sports Illustrated specifically noted that several NFL owners admitted that conversations with President Trump influenced their decision on how to handle these protests going into this meeting.
Maybe the single most effective thing that Donald Trump has ever done in his presidency and like possibly in his failure of a life is to somehow get the NFL owners to all be scared of him.
Yeah, quote from Jerry Jones, this is a very winning strong issue for me.
Oh, good.
Very winning.
Very winning
issue for
Jerry
Jones.
Everyone's language is just
taking on Trumpianisms. It's crazy, man.
You have brought the facts, and
I brought the facts.
That is so good because we have to the NFL seems to be panicking about its diminished space in American society, and they are judging what that space is based on TV ratings. And so they're making an argument to the public, and they're making an argument amongst themselves that these protests are in fact what are driving ratings lower. In effect, blaming the players for something that the players do not facilitate, do not organize, and have literally no say in the scheduling or any part of the presentation of these games on television or the contracts thereof. So I'm gonna cede it to you while I sit over here and cough and nod sagely.
Do you want to turn off your mic so we can cough as loud as you want?
You're gonna let me know why this is complete nonsense.
All right, so this is complete nonsense because NFL ratings were down 9% last year. That's used a lot as a talking point for why these anthems are, these protests are influencing the owners' money. These
$10.
Is there a charge on cussing? Because I mean, 25 cents on cussing, $10 on anthem protests.
We're even now. I've had to bleep one F-bomb so far in this podcast.
NFL ratings down 9% last season. That's been used a lot in the idea that these players kneeling are influencing owners' wallets. Overall television viewership, every network, every sport, every program, everything, down 9% last year. So NFL ratings are dropping at a consistent rate with television viewership. Now, why is that? Because of the introduction of streaming services, Hulu, Netflix, all of your favorite channels now have streaming services online. The NFL has not really been able to adapt to this, and therefore their ratings are dropping, just like all of television is. Sunday Night Football was the most watched television program in America last year. NFL games accounted for 37 of the top 50 broadcasts in America last year. That is a 32% increase on 2016. NFL ratings, while down overall, just like all of television viewership, the ratings of their programs have climbed in relation to other television programs. NFL games are being watched more than they have been in relation to other programs than previous years. There's a 10% drop for Sunday Night Football's viewership, slightly more than the 9% overall. Sunday Night Football saw an average margin of victory of 12.9 points per game, which was the highest margin of victory since 2014. Games were not good on Sunday Night Football.
No, they were not.
Football games last season were not good. We can get into that in a second, but I just want to reiterate, football games were not good last year. The NFL was not a league full of parity and full of the best. We did not see the best product on the field. We did not see the best. I hate using that term, that this is a product.
I avoid that as well.
But it's
but when it comes into your TV screen, like the entirety of the package is a product.
The program that we were watching, this television program of the NFL that we were watching, was not good last year. Why was it not good? There was a loss of stars to injury. There was a growth of concussion concerns. And specifically, when we're talking about these injuries and these concussions, out of the top 10 selling jerseys that the NFL sold last year, only one player made the playoffs.
And he's everybody's favorite.
And he's everyone's favorite player. It's Mr. Tom Brady.
Ah, oh, my. The NFL guy who's good, who's older than me.
Yeah.
What's up, Tom?
That's an issue, is when no stars, Odell Beckham Jr., Aaron Rodgers, all these guys are hurt, not playing. It influences the product. What you're watching. If I held myself back from using product, can we put a fine on product as well?
Yeah, similar fine on product. You're up to 20 now.
Dang. It influences. I mean, no one wants to watch bad football.
No, and bad football is worse than any other, the bad version of any other sport.
I 100% agree. Bad football can be painful to watch.
Bad baseball, I tell you what, like, The idea with bad baseball is that maybe they're going to bring in Jose Canseco to pitch, and he's going to, like, his whole arm is going to fall off. Bad basketball, like, you know, some announcer is going to have some story, and you can just let a game kind of free flow behind some good crosstalk between your announcers. Football is so procedural and so regimented that, like, you have to sort of regiment the fact that it's second down and three, and a team is down by 30.
Yeah, it's... Talking about kind of bad Sunday night football games, we did it earlier. The NFL and NBC have the option to flex games into that Sunday night slot. So if there's a bad game scheduled for Sunday night, they can flex in something from earlier on Sunday into that night game slot. They can move games up, move games around. They never did it last year because there was a major lack in meaningful games taking place on Sunday afternoons and Sunday nights. There was just not enough good, meaningful games. We saw a lot of major market teams play terribly. Los Angeles does not care about football, so the success of the Rams doesn't really matter.
Yeah, they're brand new in the league, and their stadium was empty. It was comical.
It was funny. It was funny to watch Rams games because there wasn't anyone there.
There were more people watching the Cleveland Browns.
There's more people. Yeah, it was.
Don't send us corrections on that. Three people who listen to the show, by the way. Yeah.
Well, I don't. Maybe they might not. They maybe can't correct us, though, because, like, Rams Stadium was empty, and when it was full of the other team's fans.
Write your corrections on a 12-pack of Old Style.
Yeah, and send it to us.
Yeah, mail that to Cheeseheads in Chicagoland.
Also, New York, both New York teams were terrible.
Garbage,
and the Giants were missing their best player. They were missing Odell Beckham Jr. Eli Manning was bad. The Giants were bad last year because they were missing their star player. The Jets... They're the Jets. They're trash. No one cares about the Jets. The Dallas Cowboys, terrible last year. Really bad.
Regression, all that stuff with Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, I had forgotten about that. But yes, also all the domestic violence stuff with Ezekiel Elliott. In Green Bay, Green Bay lost Aaron Rodgers. The
Brett Hundley era just didn't drive the ratings.
Just did not drive the ratings. Wow, crazy. Who would have thought? But yeah, I mean, Green Bay is a small market team, but is one of the most viewed and big, has one of the biggest fan bases in America for the NFL, lost their best player. There was no reason to watch the Green Bay Packers last year. If I was not a Packers fan, there's no reason. Green Bay Packers were almost as bad as the Cleveland Browns over the last half of last year.
Unless you happen to be doing a week-by-week radio recap of the Green Bay Packers then called Cheeseheads in Chicagoland, then you have to watch what's occurring with growing, mounting horror, which is what I was doing.
So that's kind of all the television numbers. Uh-huh. I mean, I've been studying the television industry and the film industry for the last couple of years. This is all numbers and fun stuff like that. On top of it, I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about how the military pays pro sports teams.
We absolutely can talk about that.
Fun. Let's see. On average, the military spent $5.4 million on national anthem displays last year. Let's find the big number. I remember seeing a big number that was something like 52 million.
And this gets to the core of what I was saying about, like, the national anthem is currently holds an inflated and very, very sort of irritated position in our culture right now. And part of capitalism is absolutely a driver of that, in that these are bought and paid for. Their television time is directly being compensated. You are essentially watching something that has gone through the same protocol channels as the Pepsi ad.
Yep.
When you watch the national
anthem. This is an advertisement to boost enlistment. This is an advertisement to boost nationalism and patriotism. This is an advertisement. You're watching an advertisement. That's all it is.
And that is, to me, like, that it is so, so cynical, because what I get back around to is that every time the NFL screws up, they blame the players.
Yeah.
And the NFL screws up repeatedly and brazenly over and over and over and over and over again on so many front office issues. And meanwhile, they're printing money. They are still, like, they're still driving revenue. They're still getting record TV contracts
so
from
much
these
money.
You know, from these media outlets. A crazy prediction: if you see a major TV outlet go bankrupt in the next 5 years, it will most likely be one of them that has a huge NFL contract that it simply cannot pay anymore.
Yeah,
because these viewership numbers are not going up anytime soon. But, like, just the cynicism of this is so amazing, and the ability to just trot out activist players as like the reason why the league is losing money, the reason why TV viewership is going down. You have so many effective examples of why that is complete and utter bullshit.
Yeah, no, it's the reason that I think viewership is declining is A, obviously television viewership is declining. B, every injury. Football has become a sport of gruesome, horrifying injuries. We have, the concussion thing has been brought to the public's light.
We know about it now.
We know about it.
Put it back.
You cannot. That can of worms has been opened. We know that these guys are risking the rest of their lives to play this game for 10 years. I mean, 10 years is a long NFL career, a storied long NFL career.
I mean, if you start in high school, the average might be a 10-year career, and I think. I am scared, because I do love football as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I do really enjoy watching the game. I think I think as a sport, like, it is entertaining, and I do a podcast about it, and I've had a favorite team for a long time. I think when we start discovering that it's not the college game or the pro game where this starts and where the danger lies, but it's in every level of the sport, and it's especially dangerous to the brains of people between the ages of 10 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're supposed to be becoming smarter and not stupider, you know, like,
you're bashing your brains against each other.
it's a dangerous game, and it's tough to be morally compromised on anything, let alone, like, entertainment. In, you know, there is no ethical consumption under capitalism.
No.
I don't know if you've seen that meme or not, but it turns out there isn't. And this is just one of those areas where, like, it may in fact turn out to be too unethical for a lot of people. But I'm going back to, like, look at the NBA as a model of how to incorporate the personalities and lived experiences of your players into your total overall product.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's in the NBA, we've been talking about injuries a lot and the problems of the injuries. In the NBA, 14 of the 15 players with the best selling jerseys were healthy, non-suspended, and playing in the playoffs. It's a competitive league where viewership has increased by 15% year over year. Their players are staying healthy, and their players are able to exist as regular human beings after leaving the league. They don't have consistent health issues after leaving the league. The NBA, the NFL doesn't have pensions for players when they leave. There's no health insurance. They're nothing. They're tossed aside when they're cut by a team. These contracts are not guaranteed. NFL players exist purely for these owners to kind of flick them around and make money. Just if you're not worth the $2 million that we said we were going to pay you, we can cut you. You'll get none of it. You'll get no health insurance. You'll have no pension. You'll have a broken brain riddled with CTE. You're probably missing a few ligaments. You probably don't walk right. Send you off. See ya.
Yeah, see ya. And even what we would think of NFL success stories, like Junior Seau's death,
my God,
just broke my heart.
I mean,
that was like a I don't know if you're familiar with Boys Life, the Boy Scouts of America official publication.
Oh, okay.
I would read it when I was a kid. Like,
yeah,
Junior Seau was sort of like the Boys Life of football players.
Yeah.
You know, held up as like this great exemplar of like, you know, manhood and integrity and such. And, mm-hmm. and that very well may be true, but he was done dirty by a league.
He was broken down by a league.
And, you know, it feels like the longer these guys' careers go, sometimes it gets more and more dangerous. And just to the right of you, you have the NBA, a league that is showing you how to succeed in so many different areas. Mm-hmm. You have a stronger players union, not a strong players union by any stretch of the imagination, but a players union that is actually starting to become strong.
Mm-hmm.
You have coaches who have been some of the most outspoken critics of the NFL and some of the most vocal supporters of their players' ability to speak honestly about like their experiences and the things that matter to them. You know, well, meanwhile, like Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich do not coach the Bobcats and the give me another bad NBA team. The
Hornets?
Bobcats.
Well, the Bobcats are not,
they don't exist anymore.
They're the Hornets, but
yeah, I've gone back in time to find a bad NBA. Yeah.
The Knicks.
Yeah. Kerr and Popovich do not coach the Nets. Yeah, there we go. We found it.
We're on it.
Yep. Basketball, it's my thing. These are men who coach the two of the elite teams in the league, and they are putting out two paragraph, very well rehearsed statements that do absolutely nothing but encourage and validate their players to do as they please, as long as it is like in an honest and like integrity filled manner. And you've seen like the NBA is not. Like, Donald Trump isn't ranting about the NBA.
No.
Somehow they have found a way to do this, and I think it's because they give the players room to be confident, realized people.
Mm-hmm. And let's also not forget that Donald Trump hates the NFL. Like, Donald Trump tried to take on the NFL and lost real bad. He's got grudges to pick with the NFL.
Which stupid team did he want to buy? The Cowboys?
I forget, but they told him no. They were like, you're not... A, you don't have the money, you dumbo. And B, like, you would ruin this team immediately. And he said, all right, hold on, let me start my own league.
Yes.
And they failed in 2 years.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, this ongoing grudge. I am... Yeah, this is the salty episode of Cheeseheads in Chicagoland, because this whole thing is cynical to its core. It is almost unbelievable. And I have another quote here that I think gets to the core of what the problem is.
The New Jersey Generals owner Donald Trump pushed the USFL to compete with the NFL in the fall of 1986, and they failed. They lost $163 million.
Oh, if only that would have stopped that man.
They never actually played that fall season. The league never played the 1986 season. They folded before they even made that.
Everything that comes out makes the NFL look worse. That's the
The NFL spent how long trying to hide the concussion thing?
Here's the league statement that, like, just again, like, my pasta is being boiled, you know, my rotini is being so heated. It was unfortunate that on-field protests created a false perception among many that thousands of NFL players were unpatriotic. Like, no, that was exactly what your reaction to it did.
Yeah,
it's not. If you're the NFL, the thing that you did, you can't call that unfortunate. Like,
yeah.
Oh, whoopsie.
Oh, no.
Oh, we threw these guys
into the fire and
into
used
the
them
fire
as political pawns.
And used them as pawns. When Yeah, it's if you're 29 minutes into this podcast and are wondering like where are Mike and Matt's politics on this? Yeah, now we are. I'm for myself. Just I could not believe in the necessity of public protest about police brutality more, and particularly. I've said it over and over. I'll keep on saying it for as long as you give me a microphone, that athletes, and particularly athletes that rise to this level, are among some of the most dedicated, responsible, and all around good and just sharp people that you'll ever meet. And the athletes that decide like, you know, a social issue is going to be something that I also care about. Like,
they deserve a platform. They,
yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. Everyone, they deserve it. They,
yeah, as much as the athletes who think that, like, okay, I do not want to ever talk about politics. I want to, like, play Settlers of Catan and earn my paychecks and, like, have my family. Or if I want to be Philip Rivers and just, like, you know, try to repopulate.
Have 100 children.
The state of California. Yeah, whatever it is you're into.
Do whatever you want, dude.
Whatever it is you're into should be encouraged. But I just, the more that I work with athletes and the more I'm given the privilege of working with athletes, and the more of them I meet, the more I'm just stunned in that, like, I don't want to, you know, I'm not calling anyone out here, but sometimes I go to gatherings where my family and extended family might be, and I hear opinions about professional athletes proffered to me from people who have never met a single one. And that's where I cause the disruption, is that I just am vociferous, like, you do not understand, you know, what these men and women do.
Yeah.
You do not understand their lives. You do not understand the level of focus and commitment and drive that it takes to be a professional athlete. And God, if one of these athletes is going to tell me, like, this is an important social cause and I support it, and, like, the league that that athlete plays for, that that athlete makes sacrifices for, that he's endangering his future for, doesn't back him up, that is garbage.
Yeah, that's a good way to say garbage. It's terrible. It's, the NFL doesn't do anything for its players. It does nothing for its players going forwards. These players are, I said it before, they're political pawns. They're just pawns for the owners. They're just, they get nothing. The NFL Players Association has to grow stronger, but the NFL does not let them. The NFL has a tight grip on employment and everything like that.
And one of the strategies that they use for that is that they create class divisions within the players' ranks. They want the guys like Tom Brady, and Tom Brady is a perfect example of someone who is probably the most out of touch with his fellow players as anyone could be, being one of the highest paid NFL players, having been around so very long and being as sheltered as he is. Like, they want to create those divisions between the Tom Brady's and the Marwin Evans.
Yeah, the seventh round draft.
The Ladarius Gunters.
Yeah, undrafted free agents.
Yeah, the long snappers. These guys who are never going to earn even seven figures in the league, whose career is going to last less than two seasons, and whose paychecks are going to probably top out after tax somewhere around, somewhere around $600,000.
And that, while that's good money,
there's nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with that money. Think about the effect that those two seasons have on the rest of their life and their earning potential for the rest of their lives. Those two seasons are 2 years worth of physical abuse that will destroy your brain, that will destroy your body and your ability to continue and live a long, healthy life.
Or if not, may actually just contribute to, like, any other number of problems, whether, you know, personal problems.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite 30 for 30 is Broke.
I haven't seen it.
It's just about players who go broke.
Oh, of course.
In the NFL. It's, okay. The ways that an introduction to the lifestyle, like, there are class divisions sewed between, you know, the players who make $7 million a year and the players who make league minimum. There are divisions there, and those divisions, I think, are propped up by the NFL as they continue to, like, they do not want to deal with 30, 55-man rosters in solidarity, 53-man rosters. Don't email me. They do not want to deal with 30 times 53 in solidarity asking for the same thing, and anything that they can do to keep that from happening is what they're going to do.
Yeah. I have the number on the money that the Department of Defense spent on stuff.
Let me have it.
According to a 2015 report by Arizona Senators Jeff Flake and John McCain, both Republicans, nearly $5.4 million was paid out to 14 NFL teams between 2011 and 2014 to honor service members and put on elaborate, quote, patriotic salutes to the military. Overall, they reported, quote, these displays of paid patriotism were included within the $6.8 million that the Department of Defense had spent on sports marketing contracts since fiscal year 2012. This is just, I mean, a few years, but just NFL. That's $5.4 million.
I cannot
of taxpayer dollars.
I cannot remember watching an NFL game that featured the national anthem played on television.
No, I
can't. Before that time happened.
No, before 2009, it didn't happen. Before 2009, no one was on the field.
Yeah,
everybody was.
No
in the
one
locker.
Was out there
until 2009, when the Department of Defense started paying for these salutes and paying to get people on the field and paying for all of this grandstanding and all of that.
And if we're going to talk about like the division being sowed, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Alejandro Villanueva, their offensive lineman who played for the Naval Academy.
Yeah.
He was an active service member for a while. The way that they used him.
Yeah.
As like a cynical ploy of like driving division. They tried to use Villanueva as a stake to drive between like his teammates and the rest of, yeah, and the coaching staff, and the fact that like he came out for the national anthem, like now again, like I got no problem with Villanueva, and but the way he was used, especially he released a statement after that game where the rest of the team was in the locker room, and he came out like that was, you know, he got done dirty, and it's just an example of what you can see the NFL doing,
drawing these divisions, drawing these lines, and forcing players to not become a union, not become strong together.
This is an NFL podcast where we talk about the NFL every week. Mm-hmm. It's Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. He's Matt Melumsetter. Hey. He brought the facts today. We're both so salty about this, which is why we're throwing this episode out at you. It's the best podcast about the NFL. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Cheesecagoland. You can join our Facebook group. It's called Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. You can send me email to cheeseheadsinchicagoland@gmail.com. But you might want to just follow us on Twitter instead.
Follow us on Twitter.
If you can't condense your thoughts about the NFL into 280 characters.
What are you doing in the modern age,
the
buddy?
The DMs are open. Yeah, they are.
Send a couple.
They're open. Yeah, slide right in there, ladies and gentlemen. We are listening to you. We are the favorite podcast of McKinton Dorlant. We are everything you need. We are your leftist anger podcast about the NFL. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're just going to hit a few quick Packers things, and then we're going to get on out of your ears. Thanks for listening to Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. It is Cheeseheads in Chicagoland, the best show about the Green Bay Packers. You can find us on iTunes or any other of the podcast apps. I'm Mike Fleischman. Over there, that's Matt Melumsetter. We've put enough salt on the burger for one day, I think. If you want to talk to us any more about our views on the NFL in general, or the NFL's weird relationship with the armed services, or the NFL's incredibly backwards and Neolithic, incredibly stupid,
Neanderthal.
Yeah,
Is that a word?
Incredibly stupid opinions about player agency and player social involvement and the NFL's right to deal with that. Yeah, Cheesecagoland on Twitter, at Cheesecagoland. I'm at MP Fleischman on Twitter. He's at Melemsetter on Twitter.
M-E-L-E-M-S-E-T-E-R.
All E's, no double consonants. Ladies and gentlemen, let's do an icebreaker question because we didn't do one coming into the first one because we were both just like revving the engines.
Yeah, we were ready. We've been counting down. Mike texted me like a week ago and was like, hey, can you record a podcast today? And I was like, no, I'm busy. Wednesday's the first time I can do it. And Mike's like, let's go.
What was my exact question? Something like, do you want to be angry at the NFL with me?
Today? And I was like, I can't. I'm sorry. I wish.
Like, I was ready to just kind of start just podcasting, just turn on Facebook Live and be like, listen, assholes. Icebreaker question. All-time favorite movie.
All-time favorite movie. I think my all-time favorite movie is Only God Forgives by Nicholas Vinding Refn, director of Drive. It came out in 2013. If you are faint-hearted, I would not recommend watching it. It's very violent. It's very... a beautiful film. It's one of the most well-shot films I've ever seen. It's so interestingly directed. It draws almost its entire story, all of its plot points, everything like that is from like visual metaphors. It's got a very alluring, mysterious performance by Ryan Gosling as the lead. It takes place in Thailand, in Bangkok. Ryan Gosling plays like his name's Julian. He runs a boxing ring, but it's just a front for like a drug operation being run out of America. It's very interesting look at like a troublesome familial relationship in kind of this drug world. It's very interesting. I really like it.
I'm going to have to get to that one. I've seen Drive.
Drive's great.
But I haven't seen Only God Forgives.
Only God Forgives is, so Drive is, I would say, Nicholas Vinding Refn's kind of most mainstream, most accessible, comprehensible. It makes sense. You can kind of...
It does.
You can get it. You know where every point goes, you get it. Only God Forgives was his reaction to the success of Drive. It was him looking at that going, this is me, but it's not fully me. And going so far inside of himself to kind of... It's nuts, man. It's nuts. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm not an avid movie watcher, but I do like the more impressionistic filmmakers.
Yeah.
I like your Kubricks. I like your David Lynch. Mm-hmm. I like David Lynch a lot. Love David actually. Lynch. But
what's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie is Ghostbusters.
Oh yeah.
1984 Ghostbusters. And it is the absolute opposite of an impressionist film. Yeah, it is one of the most tightly scripted, tightly edited, impeccably acted movies out there. It captures a time.
Yeah.
In that, like, it captures a time for me in that I was a young single digit age child. I was born in 1980. Mm-hmm. So the first time I saw that movie was probably 1985. Mm-hmm. We taped it off the television on our brand new VCR, and it absolutely captivated me as a young kid because it's an action movie and because it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Murray is a funny character.
Bill Murray's great.
Well, there's something you don't see every day. It's just that dryness. Like, I sound the way I do in a large part because of Ghostbusters. But then you watch it as an adult and you find some more things in it
that
weren't
there.
I haven't
seen it in like 10 years, probably.
I'll
have to watch it again.
It's a good one. There's if you want to be a pretentious dick, which I do.
Yeah, no, that's my favorite thing.
Find your, find your themes about like science versus religion, about like the growing power of technology to replace mysticism and spirituality. Mm-hmm. Like those are in that movie.
Yeah,
I don't, that's
and that's not a mistake that those themes,
not at
that's
all
that's written in there. That's part of the screenplay. That's
the libertarian pursuit of innovation versus the bureaucratic. Way of doing things. The all of these things. The post World War II, fear about society. Like the scars that fascism, launched. Like the conceit of it is that an architect was so dismayed by society that he built a building to bring it to its end. Mm-hmm. He used an invention. He used architecture and all these things that we like that we look at as like, you know, pinnacles of modern society, and he used it to try and end the world. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not accidental.
No. Yeah.
And yeah, you don't see that when you're young. Mm-hmm. But that's my take on Ghostbusters. I am the most 37-year-old man that you could possibly have right now. Oh. Only God Forgives and Ghostbusters. Those are two Cheeseheads in Chicagoland movies. We'll talk more movies. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the actual headlines, I want to let you plug what the heck you're doing, because you have a film project in the works that this summer is going to be like important for you.
Yes, I am spending my summer out in Los Angeles. I am directing a film called The Item. It's about a man who finds a mysterious object in a thrift store, can't figure out what it is, and it kind of, his obsession with that object kind of destroys their relationship. I'm spending this summer out in LA working with Tommy O'Haver, directing it. Tommy O'Haver directed Ella Enchanted and The Most Hated Woman in America, which was a Netflix original last year, which was pretty darn good.
You have me already, because I love finding objects in thrift stores. It's a thing I do a lot.
It's a fun thing. I live right next to a really great thrift store. I live right next to Roscoe Village, Village Discount in Roscoe Village on Roscoe Street.
Yeah, I know that one. I was in there last week.
Yeah, I live right down the street. I live right up Point on that. I love that place. That's where I wrote it to take place. But of course, they don't have Roscoe Village Discount out in LA, so we'll have to switch it up. But
no, that's fantastic. If people follow you on social media, they mm-hmm. can learn more about that. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to that. Anything else you want to plug as far as your filmmaking work?
Oh yeah, I actually just finished directing a film called The Emu War, which is about the 1932 military action in Australia, where emus invaded a town, and the Western Australian Parliament actually had to send in the military. This is a real thing that happened. The Western Australian Parliament had to send in the military to fight these emus, and they lost. They lost the war.
Oh my God!
This is a parliamentary. It was a real like war on emus, and they lost. The emus won. They found out that the emus were way harder to kill than they expected. There's a quote from a general that the only way to kill an emu was to shoot it straight through its beak when it's was open, or straight through the back of the head. Otherwise, the bullets would either bounce off or lodge in, and they wouldn't die. Emus started hiding. They figured out that they could hide and sneak attack and stuff like that. They outsmarted the Australian military. They outlasted the Australian military. They ran out of bullets and just
had to leave. How is this not just universally regarded as the most important thing that's ever happened in Australia?
Incredible. There's a great Wikipedia article about it, but if you follow me on any social media, you'll find links to articles that have been written about the work, and also like the Indiegogo, so you can help fund it.
Awesome. That is
we just put a trailer up.
Emus,
it'll be out in August 2018. If you donate, I think it's $5 or $10, you'll get a copy as soon as I finish editing.
This is that's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. I meant to ask you about it because I saw the name The Emu War, and I knew that the explanation was going to be equally as completely good as that name. So let's do the Green Bay Packers podcast thing right now. A couple of free agent signings that have taken place past the compensatory pick area of free agent signings. The Packers have added a tight end, and I think this puts an end to the Dez Bryant to Green Bay possibility. Yeah. They have added Mercedes Lewis, who spent his entire career with the Jacksonville Jaguars from 2006 all the way up to last year. He's 34 years old. He is a veteran. He is a guy who was just so vital to Jacksonville in that Jacksonville has not been able to have a lot of stability
right
down there with all the coaching changes they've gone through, all the quarterback ideas, you know, all of the ownership changes. You know, Mercedes Lewis was vital to them. The Packers get him. It's a great idea. If this guy catches zero passes for the Packers, like this guy was vital to Jacksonville.
Vital to Jacksonville's locker room presence. He is a decent pass catcher, but beyond that, he's a great blocker. Mm-hmm. He's old. He's 34 years old. He's not going to be moving quick. He's not going to be the best route runner, but he's a veteran presence that can block on the end of the line. I bet we see a lot of two tight end sets with Jimmy Graham spreading out wide and Mercedes Lewis blocking on one end of the line.
Yeah, His biggest seasons came back in 2010. He had 58 catches in 2010. That's by far his highest number. He did grab 5 touchdowns last mm-hmm. year. Having a decent quarterback down yeah. there helps them out a little bit. I'm surprised that Blake Bortles turned into what I yeah. can call a decent quarterback. That's yeah. surprising enough.
League average.
But he Bortled his way to 5 touchdowns for Mercedes Lewis. So, yeah, Aaron Rodgers putting some balls in maybe some better spots is going to help him out. But that's a smart signing.
I think that's a really great signing. It adds to our – we've always had questions about tight end depth. Since JerMichael Finley left, the Green Bay Packers have struggled to find good, consistent tight ends. Richard Rodgers never turned it really into anything. Jared Cook was only here for a year. Lance Kendricks has struggled since coming in. Adding Mercedes Lewis is just a good depth signing.
Yeah, a guy who is just going to help out, and
yeah.
you know, you figured if you know, he's not going to be alarmed when the balls aren't going his way, mm-hmm. and it's such a great decoy player to have out on the field yeah. as well. In that all of a sudden you forget about him, or if you know he's been in the league long enough to where like if he's got like blitz pickup assignments, but then has a route if no one blitzes, he's going to be able to make yeah. that right choice and just be sitting in the flat. Rodgers has needed a check down
yeah.
for a long time, and. Lewis gives you that ability to just get a guy who is going to be out there, and maybe you know you're not going to double him. You're right. going to worry about Jimmy Graham. You're going to worry about Devontae Adams.
Yeah,
and it's a great little option.
Yeah, it's and to say that he's old is I don't want to discount him. He's still going to be able to be a viable part of our offense. He's not completely worthless as an NFL player at the age of 34. He's still pretty good. You said he got 5 touchdowns last year. He's going to be a big red zone target. Even if he's slotted behind Lance Kendricks and Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, I think Lewis has to immediately take Kendricks' spot. We mm-hmm. might be the end of Lance Kendricks as a Packer, especially with some of the size they have in their other younger yeah. wide receivers. The other signing this week is Byron Bell, mm-hmm. a backup for the Cowboys, but this is a 29-year-old offensive line, sort of a hybrid guard tackle, another guy who seems like a Justin McCray kind of signing, in that this is a guy who you can put at a number of different positions. This is a guy who was an insurance policy against Brian Bulaga, maybe not being ready to go in the mm-hmm. first quarter of the season, possibly first half of the season, if some of the rumors are to be believed. Byron Bell has 74 NFL starts
yeah,
under his belt.
And he's appeared in 90 total games. So he's played 7 years, 74 starts, 90 total games. This is a guy that has quality NFL experience, can step in and play both guard tackle slots. He's going to be a good spot starter.
Yeah, this is not the level of talent that you get with a Jarre Evans,
mm-mm.
you know, a veteran Pro Bowler type guy coming from yeah. New Orleans, but just another guy who it means that if you get in trouble, you do not have to lean on a second or third year guy or one of the guys on the Packers like Kyle Murphy, who is coming off an injury and you don't even know about in the yeah. first place.
It means that we're not relying on unproven, unknown entities if
yeah,
we see more injuries on the line. It means that we have quality backups. We have depth on our offensive line. This is a great depth signing. He's not being picked to be the right tackle of the future. That's not what he's here for. He's here to be a great depth piece.
Yeah, that has to be Jason Spriggs' presumptive mm-hmm. role as the right tackle of the future, the new Bulaga. But boy, it's a pressure acquisition as well, because all of a sudden Spriggs and Murphy have to know that you now have McCray and Bell
yeah.
sitting behind them in practice. Bell, 29 years old. He's got to know. You know, we just talked about, you know, the tenuousness of an NFL career.
Yeah.
You know, Bell is aware that coming off a season where he made 2 starts for the Cowboys, he's going to want to make an impression.
He's going to want to play. He's going to want to be able to make more money soon.
Yeah, so this puts a lot of pressure on your young guys as they should be doing right now. This is the perfect time if you want to iron it out and you want to really see what some guys have in a position where they're not taking anything for granted.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you do it. So
yep.
no Dez Bryant, we got Mercedes Lewis instead. Probably not the worst idea. That's
Dez Bryant would have been a big splash signing. I would have enjoyed it, but Mercedes Lewis is smart.
Yeah, he is. He's a good tight end, and it shores up a position where, like, I know Dez Bryant enjoys blocking on the perimeter. I know that's something that he really likes, but enjoying it versus being particularly good at
being very good at it.
Yeah, is not the same thing, and having a guy on the line who's. You've got a three running back platoon.
Yeah.
You better have a tight end who can block a little bit if you're going to do that. That's our Packers news. There ain't much else.
No, it's the middle of the offseason. We're kind of lost.
Yeah, we convened this one mainly because we were mad at the National Football League. I'm still salty. I was curious because
pounding the desks.
Am I going to be able to like keep my anger fresh? Because we live in an outrage culture now. Mm-hmm. Where like we have to be outraged about a new thing every week.
Yeah, well, it's kind of.
I'm still angry about this today.
The Trump presidency. Yeah, right? It's one thing after the other.
Oh, our special boy president, and his war against people who are infinitely less powerful than him. It's just. It's so amazing. What's that rule, Melham Setter? Should you punch up or punch down?
Apparently punch down if you're Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently.
Punch
way down. Leader of the free world. Can't be asked about like international politics or trade wars or anything, but boy oh boy, he's gonna give you like a rambling 15-minute set in which he works blue about the NFL.
Start calling those owners. Hey. What's that about North Korea? No. Start calling the NFL owners. You should complain about the black athletes who are protesting.
Yeah. Don't do that, folks. Don't call and complain. I know it's tough because I'm in these rooms with like people who I've talked about, like they maybe don't understand what a professional athlete does. And like the minute you think about these guys as entitled, like you've lost me.
Yep.
They're the opposite of entitled. You know, have worked for everything, and it's the prima donna reputation as well, and that just gets me in that, like, if you start playing team sports before you're even like 10 years old, you have to fit into a locker room.
Yeah.
You know, the margin for error from junior high through high school through college is so, so small.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of coaches who will not give you a second chance when you mess up and when you're selfish or when you skip practice or when you blow off what the coach says or if you miss an assignment. Mm-hmm. The difference between like pursuing your dream of playing sports down the line into your 20s and 30s versus having it come to an end when you're 14,
yeah,
because you and your buddies decided to F off out of practice and do something else.
Yeah.
It's one or two decisions sometimes that makes the difference. Mm-hmm. And to call these players entitled is the utmost madness and delusion.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about it, like a guy like Johnny Manziel? Does he fit as like an entitled player? Like what is the...
Possibly. He might be as close to an entitled player as we've seen. I'm going to give you another rant as I'm watching the timer tick down. I am a big believer in second chances.
Yeah.
And, you know, from Manziel, it's clearly, I'm also a big believer in addiction as a health issue, as a disease, as a treatable condition.
Mm-hmm.
But very frequently addiction manifests itself as incredibly assholish behavior.
Right.
And for a guy that very clearly was just, you know, off of his nuts the entire time that he was in the NFL and probably the end of his college career.
He said probably most of his college career.
Yeah. And most likely a good deal of his high school career as well. For a guy who was that clearly high as heck for that entire time. Yeah. Is he entitled? Does he have a disease?
Yeah.
I fall on the side of, does he have a disease?
Okay.
And like, does that disease, is it infuriating to watch it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is infuriating to watch it. But at the same time, like this is, I'm very, very passionate about people getting second chances. I've had a few. So, yeah that's.
Starting up in the CFL this season.
Yeah, he's going to
move.
He is going to learn that they play good football up there.
Play good football.
That game goes fast, Matt.
Have you watched a lot of Canadian football?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of spacing.
Yeah.
A lot of open field maneuvers. That is a very, very fast aerial game. He is going to be dealing with immediate pressure and have to make some very quick decisions and make some very accurate throws, because there are guys who will very gladly take his roster spot and just, like, Kurt Warner you to death.
Yeah.
Up there. You know, there are plenty of guys who you know, put the football into the through the tire at 15 yards moving on a rope.
Crazy.
Yeah. So Manziel has his work cut out for him there. I don't think he was ever an NFL caliber prospect.
I thought that was a crazy pick at 22.
Oh, it's madness. That would have been a crazy pick in the sixth round.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm a GM, which no one's paying me for that, but if anyone wants to.
Yeah, I'll take that money.
I can mess up your team.
I'll take that money.
Yeah. Would you like your team's legacy to come to an Isaiah Thomas-like halt?
Do you want it to be tarnished forever?
I mean,
by multiple years of...
Okay, so some of the allegations of harassment and such, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not a harasser. Guy. There's some of that stuff on, but you know, would you like me to give Jerome James $40 million or whatever it was?
Yeah,
give me control of the checkbook. I'll be asking for third chances after that. All right, it's Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. We have been ranting. It's been fun. We're gonna take take another probably couple weeks off because nothing's happening,
right?
And we're gonna come back when something happens. So at Chicagoland on Twitter, stay with us there if you want to know when the next episode is out. We're on iTunes. We're on everything except Google Play, because I can't figure out Google Play. Can you, like, DM me if you know anything about Google Play?
Cool. Hey Google, can you DM us?
Yeah, can you make it easier?
Hey Mr. Google.
Because I gotta know what things mean in order to set that up, and I don't yet. Facebook group is called Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. Thank you so much for joining us. One last thing before we go. I want to say a farewell and a rest in peace to Dave Miller, who worked for Regional Radio Sports Network. He passed away this week. He was a great man that I had the privilege of knowing from January of this year onwards, just for a very short time. And I want to send the best to his family, his wife, and his two kids, and let him know that, Dave, you made a good impact on my life. So thank you, man. All right, we're out.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.